You can be seated. I've always wanted to preach right after Bo Wagner, so. Friends, do not let friends preach after Bo Wagner. But here we are. Well, not a great message. I love preaching on the home. I love to hear preaching on the home, and it's greatly needed. And I've been listening to everything on the road coming up here today. And been a blessing so far. Love this place. Love coming here. Love Brother Gravely. And isn't it good to see Brother Eric Brown? Isn't it good to see him in the meeting? I know he wasn't able to be here last year. And what a blessing to see him. John chapter 5. John chapter 5. Always put the brief preacher right in front of dinner. The Gospel of John chapter 5. Give you a little thought. The problem with coming to these meetings is you look out and you preach for other people, and then you got to try to figure out, what did I preach when I was at their place? You know, Chad Bailey's here. I'm trying to think, okay, what did I preach when I was over there? And there's Chris Hewitt, and I know one of the things I preached. I can't remember the second thing. And now they put everything online, and it kind of throws everything off. But this is, I preached this only in my church. I've never preached it out, so I feel pretty safe here. John chapter 5, verse 1. After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool, which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having five porches. In these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, of blind and halt and withered, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then first, after the troubling of the water, stepped in, was made whole of whatsoever disease he had. A certain man was there, which had an infirmity 38 years. When Jesus saw him lie and knew that he had been now a long time in that case, he saith unto him, Wilt thou be made whole? The impotent man answered him, Sir, I have no man, when the water is troubled, to put me into the pool. But when I am coming, another steppeth down before me. Jesus saith unto him, Rise, take up thy bed, and walk. And immediately the man was made whole, and took up his bed, and walked. And on the same day was the Sabbath. In the last several decades, we have had new words and phrases entered into our vocabulary that I don't remember hearing when I was in my growing up years. Words such as social justice, group identity, critical race, virtue signaling. I preached a few years ago in our church a little series on this whole social justice and critical race theory that permeates our institutes of higher learning and our major corporations. Social justice says that society must be fair for every person. So really, social justice is social equality. We must level the playing field, not only of rights and opportunities, but also of outcomes. Everyone must have the same outcome, even if we have to force equality from taking from those who have and giving to those who do not have. Maybe this looks like wealth distribution by way of more government handouts, or this is hiring quotas in the corporate world, or every kid gets a trophy, even though your kid stinks at sports. Social justice is anything but just. According to this philosophy, as long as there is inequality, there can be no justice. It is not fair. It is not just for one person to have more than another. If one person has advantage, then that advantage must be taken away and given to the disadvantaged. And what this does is this strips away incentive for both the advantage and the disadvantage to improve upon their life. If I know that half of my points are going to be taken away and given to my opponent at the end of the game, then why am I trying to score so many points? And the player who's not as good as me, why should he put in the hard work if at the end of the game he's going to get half of my points anyway? That's what we have in our society. Now, in order for this to work, there has to be class envy. There has to be a class struggle. You can't divide people on the principles of hard work and personal responsibility and caring for one another and contentment with what you have. There has to be envy. There has to be resentment. There has to be jealousy. There has to be division. And in order for a person to struggle against another person, he has to believe that that person has cheated him in some way. Good old-fashioned class struggle. So what our society has done, it has created aggrieved classes and has assigned people to those aggrieved classes. If you are part of a group that is oppressed or marginalized or cheated, then just by your identity in that group, you are owed something. On the flip side, if you are in an oppressor group, then you are guilty by association. If you are in an oppressed group, you may not personally feel like you are oppressed, but you are because of your identity. And to have a just society, we don't deal with just an individual being marginalized, but we have an entire class of people that are now marginalized. Social justice, social fairness. Fairness is equal outcomes. It's not fair that you have a job and I don't. It's not fair that your house is paid off and mine is not paid off. And the reason why it is not fair is because I have been marginalized. I have been oppressed by some group that oppresses me. And I may get welfare and free housing and free cheese and live like every other American, but I identify in a group that has been oppressed historically. So you may be a left-handed cross-eyed lesbian. That's the group that you identify with, and society has not been fair to your group. And all the voices, news, media, Hollywood, sports, politics, all of it operates where you're either oppressed or you are the oppressor. Now, what happens if you happen to belong to two oppressed groups? That is the jackpot. That is called intersectionality. If you are a minority, then the system is rigged against you. But if you are a minority woman, then all the much better. Now, if you can manage to be a blue-haired lesbian, then you get to say that everybody is racist and sexist and homophobic, and you get to go around and you're mad at the whole world. The more oppressed groups that you belong to, then the more offended that you get to be. And that is how the prevailing spirit of victim culture permeates our world. It began with Adam blaming Eve for tempting him with the forbidden fruit, and then you have Cain blaming Abel for bringing a better offering to God. That's where the blame game began. The first victims in the world was the first man and the first child born into the world. And we all have a capacity to blame others for the way that our life has become, but this victim culture is where victimhood becomes a virtue. My victimhood somehow makes me superior, and I demand special treatment and endless apologies. So we have politicians now still apologizing for slavery, and people who were born 150 years ago are still traumatized, or born 150 years after the Civil War are still traumatized by it. And somebody who has never been a slave somehow is owed reparations by somebody who has never owned a slave. That is victimhood. Now, to be sure, there are victims in our world. There are people that suffer, and there are people that suffer injustices. They are born in situations that set them back or that handicap them. There are people that are abused, and there are people that are victims of all sorts of evil. All of us have bad things happen to us, and some of you more than others, but you can be a victim without having a victim mentality. You see, what shapes you is your experiences in life and how you respond to those experiences. But victimhood has taken over our society. People who find their identity in whatever injustice that they have been served, and they hold it like a sword over everybody else's head. Politicians are the best at playing the game, pitting one group against the next group, trying to get votes. I was in an airport terminal not too long ago, and standing in the terminal, I try to guess who I'm going to get stuck with sitting on in the airport or in the airplane. And there was a woman. It was obvious that she was a lesbian, and the rings and the tattoos and the blue hair and all of that. And she was wearing a T-shirt in bold letters, And it said, why be racist, sexist, homophobic, misogynistic when you can just be quiet? She's a victim. She's miserable is what she is. I wanted to get mad at her, but then I pitied her because I had more joy than she did.
That's right.
And whatever problems that she has, they are my fault. You see, whatever your problem, you have to have somebody to blame for the problem. But I want you to know that weaknesses and shortcomings and failure is not a virtue.
That's right.
The older ones of you sitting in here, and I'll join you in this, we were taught to take responsibility for our actions, to see our shortcomings as opportunities. Setbacks just put you one step closer to success. And instead of whining and looking for somebody to get mad at, we were grateful for any opportunity that we were given. And we were told to work hard and be strong and find a way to make something of ourselves. In my day and age, we didn't want to be coddled and pampered and pandered to. All that we wanted was a fair shot. And if it wasn't a playing field, then that just meant we was going to have to play even the harder. But we never saw ourselves as a victim, because victims live in misery. You may get special attention, you may get extra privileges, but all that it does is gives you a very unempowered, uninspiring, underachieving life. But that's the new class. I'm going somewhere. I know this is really odd for Jubilee, but you got all week to recover, so don't worry about it, all right? This is the new class struggle. You see, the first thing that victimhood wants you to know is their disadvantage. We teach it to our children on the sports team. Everybody gets a trophy so we don't create a little victim. When they get old enough to get a job, there has to be a safe place for their fragile ego. You can offend somebody now by just using the wrong pronoun. There's a whole long list of words that we used when I was a kid, but now they are taboo because there's 6 people out of 8 billion in the world that are triggered when they hear that word. Huh? And now all of society has to bow down to this snowflake, these perpetually offended people that lord over the rest of society because somebody's afraid to look at them and say, you're crazy is what you are. Am I doing okay? I'm going, so I'm actually going to go somewhere in just a minute. Huh? Everybody has been a victim of something or someone, but pick yourself up and dust yourself off and refuse to be identified as a victim. There are too many rags to riches stories that I've heard for me to tell you that you can start in last place and still finish first. And on the flip side, there are too many privileged losers that I have seen to say that you can be handed life on a silver platter and still end up a pariah to society. In our story, there is a man who has had an infirmity for 38 years. We don't know what caused it. Don't know, was he born with it? Did somebody injure him? But somehow this man is a victim of some circumstance. Now there was a legend that every so often an angel would trouble the waters at the pool of Bethesda, and the first man in was healed of whatever it was that ailed him. So we have this man here at the Pool of Bethesda, and our text does not say that he has been beaten in the water for 38 years. I don't know how often he has come to the pool. But for however many years he has come to the pool, the best he has ever gotten to was second place. And in this case, second place meant he was the first loser. The Lord passes by. He sees him. He knows how long he's been there. And the Lord asks a very probing question. Here's the question. Wilt thou be made whole? Now that's a probing question. Because you know, there are some drug addicts that don't want to be clean. Did you know that there are some drunks that do not want to be sober? In fact, there are hypochondriacs who would be miserable if they didn't have something to make them miserable to complain about. Now I don't fault this man at all for having an infirmity, but I do wonder at his answer. His answer is, sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me in the pool. I would have thought a better answer would be, yes, I would like to be made whole. But here's what he does. He shifts blame to everybody else for why he is victimized. I would already be whole if it weren't for
all these people. A person with a victim mentality has learned to use that as a crutch for his life. It is a ready-made excuse for every failure, every weakness, every disadvantage, and if not for the victimhood state, they wouldn't have any state at all. Do you want to be made whole? Well, I'm not sure. Let's talk about it. First of all, victimhood gives you a sense of attention. You see, if you are made whole, then nobody's going to give you special attention. You know, when a child breaks his arm and comes in with a cast, and that's really cute, you know. Or even when a teenage boy, you know, sprains his ankle playing soccer and he's got to wear crutches for 3 months, you know, and everybody, that's really cute. But it's no longer cute when you have to announce on Facebook your ingrown toenail as if anybody really cares. Huh? Wilt thou be made whole? Well, not if nobody's going to notice me anymore. That there are just people who are addicted to drama. And if none is happening, they're going to create some on their own. They could fix their problems, but that's the only source of attention that they have. So they would rather be affirmed than to be made whole. Then victimhood gives them a sense of achievement. Here is an infirmed man, and that's all that he is. Again, it's not his fault that he has an infirmity. But is there anything else to say about him other than his infirmity? Is there anything in his life that matters besides just his infirmity? And I don't know about him, but I do know people whose entire identity is wrapped up in their victimhood. They're poor because they're a victim. They didn't get a good education because they're a victim. They can't hold down a job because they're a victim. They didn't get the promotion because they're a victim. Their only achievement is they have never achieved anything. So victimhood gives them a sense of achievement, and then victimhood gives them a sense of attitude. They don't know how to think positively. They cannot imagine another outcome to life because this attitude of victimhood is so ingrained in them. If they were told that their victimhood does not serve them, they would not know how to function without it. If you took the victimhood away from them, they would not know who they are. And in this way, the victim mentality is more crippling than the thing that victimizes them. Whatever set them back doesn't set them back nearly as much as the mentality that I have been set back, and there is nothing that I can do about it. So quickly, I'm hurrying. I know that they're ready to eat quickly. The victim and his acquaintances. You can still visit the Pool of Bethesda in Jerusalem. It's no longer a pool, but you can go there. And in gospel days, it was a pool that was surrounded by five colonnades or five porches, and it was not where dignified people would visit. Verse 3 tells us there was a great company of impotent folk, blind, halt, withered. Now, I'm not belittling these poor people at all, but I am painting a picture for you that this was a back alley kind of place. This was where you came when you were desperate and you didn't have any other hope. If you had money, you went to the doctor. If you didn't have any money, you came to the pool of Bethesda. And these are desperate people. You have only one chance a year for a miracle. You don't know when it is coming, so people are literally camping out there all year long. They heard about a miracle. People always flock to those places where they believe that a miracle has happened. And everyone, watch this, every one of those people have their own problem. And none of them are going to help you if it means they don't get help for their problem. They will walk over top of you if it means getting their own miracle. They're not going to risk helping this man if that means they're going to risk losing their miracle. The company that he is keeping are people who have serious issues, and they will walk over top of you to get their own help. It is strange to me that in 38 years, nobody has ever said in 38 years, you know, Bob has been here the longest. Why don't we just step back and let him in first? Why don't we just let this be the year that Bob gets his miracle? Nobody does that. He acknowledges that no man will put him in the pool. When he tries to get in, somebody steps in before him. He points the finger of blame at the people, but he's sitting with the people. And you can't say you want to get up if you're always sitting around people that are dragging you down. A man that wants to overcome drinking, you might want to start by getting rid of your drinking buddies. A man who is struggling with something can't help you unstruggle with the same thing. If you want to quit smoking, then don't take tips from the smoker. If you want to be made whole, you might need to find some people who have been made whole. Misery loves company, and some company just makes you miserable. I don't know this man's infirmity. He can move because the Bible says, while I am coming, another stepping down before me. He has some mobility. He has intelligence. He's not deaf or dumb. He has reason. He has logic. He does not appear to be blind. And I'm not minimizing his infirmity, but I'm just pointing out he has a limited capacity to care for himself. And it would be helpful if somebody would help him, but they're interested in helping themselves. I'm not totally buying that the only thing that he can do is lie there for 38 years. With all the other crippled and diseased folks, and he's just sitting there waiting for somebody to have pity, but his acquaintances are not going to help him. Do you see that? Yeah. Victimhood is always supported by a cadre of other victims. You must find your own fellowship of aggrieved and offended people to feed off of each other. Bitter people need bitter people to feed their bitterness. Angry people need another angry person to feed their anger. That fellow is going to tell you to get over your victimhood, but then you have to take responsibility for yourself. And what fun is that? And if you are a victim and if you are miserable, then maybe you have to change the acquaintances that you are with. I don't know where this man can go who would help him. I really don't, but I would agree these people are not going to help him. They're too preoccupied with their own troubles. If you're discouraged, get around somebody that's sunny. If you're broke, find somebody that knows how to make money. If you're always angry, then find somebody that doesn't have a temper. If you're just mad at the world, find somebody that's in love with Jesus. Victim and his acquaintance. I got to hurry. The victim and his anguish. The Bible clearly tells us he has an infirmity, something for 38 years. Average life expectancy in that day was not that long, and so fair assumption think he's had it for all or at least most of his life. It is limiting. It most likely causes pain in his body. And I don't know, maybe one side is weaker than the other. Maybe there is a limb that does not work. Maybe some crippling factor. I don't know. He's not just a hypochondriac that is upset that the doctor didn't find something seriously wrong. It's not in his head. This is real. And he has a physical anguish. And we all know people that suffer physically, and it is very real. In our church, if we take prayer requests from the floor, 9 out of 10 are physical because we live in decaying bodies. And when you suffer in body, it taxes the mind. It's hard to think about anything else when you are sitting in anguish of body. There are people in our church who just had surgery. We have some that are fighting cancer. I have one lady getting ready to have a very, very serious major surgery. We have a young lady in our church who's been fighting a disease. She'll fight it for the rest of her life. That's not a victim mentality. That's the harshness of life in a sick body. Please don't misunderstand what I'm going to say. Some people say, I'm not just going to be this way for the rest of my life. I may not be able to heal myself, but I'm going to improve my situation as best as I can. May have diabetes or whatever the doctor said, but I am going to learn to live with it. It may not be treatable, it may not be curable, but I'm going to live the best I can every day of my life. It's what I have, but it is not who I am.
Hippocrates said, before you heal somebody, ask if they're willing to give up the thing that made them sick. So a lot of people want to be healed, but they don't want to give up what made them sick. Yes. They want to fix the problem, but they don't want to fix themselves. If you don't want lung cancer, maybe don't smoke. If you don't want cirrhosis of the liver, maybe a good step is don't start drinking. And again tonight, some of you have very real health problems, and there's nothing that you can do to prevent it. There's nothing that you can do to cure it. And you're not the subject here, but if you have a physical problem and you could help yourself, then don't become a victim of it. Do you want to get better, or do you just want to complain? And by the way, can I say this? I wish that some people would learn to suffer with dignity. I don't have to tell you every headache that I have and walk around like I'm about to fall over dead on my feet. The mark of a true man is he can be sick and you never know it. But some people don't want a fix. They just want you to listen to how bad they feel. Paul had a thorn in the flesh. He didn't tell us what it was. We've been trying to guess ever since then. And the reason why he didn't tell us is because he told God. For this thing I besought the Lord thrice, that it might depart from me. We sing tell it to Jesus, but I really would rather tell it to you so you can know how bad I feel. Physical anguish. Psychological anguish. Mental health issues are as real as physical issues. They can be just as debilitating. Many preachers who felt like they didn't know how to deal with the psychological have resorted to dismissing it. That's not an answer. The mind can be as broken just as much as the body. If you had an infirmity for 38 years, your mind would be as distressed as your body was. Do you not think this man is anxious trying to get into the pool? Do you not think this man is discouraged every time he doesn't get into the pool? Do you not think this man is self-conscious, crippled, hobbling down the street, people watching him? Do you not think there are sadness because the dreams of his family and the career have probably passed him by? I think that he had a long list of emotional scars on his heart. By the way, I would just say this in passing. If your infirmity is hidden from everybody else and no one seems to understand the broken mind, know that somebody does understand. There is help for that too. We have the victim and his acquaintances, the victim and his anguish. Here's what we want to get to, the victim and his argument. He never answers the question, wilt thou be made whole? He is so used to blaming others for his missing out that becomes his default answer. No longer is his infirmity the issue. That has long ago gone the way. Now the issue is what others have done to him. But there is someone standing before him who can help him. But does he even want help? We can hold on to something for years as a security blanket, and that becomes an excuse for all of our other problems. But there's a whole lot of people who got offended in a church somewhere and they didn't get bitter over it. There's a whole lot of people who had bad parents, but they didn't use that as an excuse to be a dysfunctional parent themselves. And here's what Jesus says. He says, wilt thou be made whole? That's the first question that you have to answer. Do you even want to get better? Do you want the excuse for poor living, or do you want to get up and walk out of here? Do you want to be healed, or do you want a ready-made excuse for every failure in your life? And there is someone standing before you who can heal the hurt and give you a way out of victimhood, but do you even want it? Here's his answer. I'm done, sir. I have no man. I can't do it. I was born with a disadvantage. Everybody here is faster than I am. And can I tell you that somebody will always be faster than you? Somebody will always be stronger than you. Somebody will always have more advantages than you. But when you have the victim mentality, you not only look down on yourself, but you resent everybody else. You hear the resentment, you hear the contemptuous voice. It's been 38 years that I've been here. That means he has watched 38 people receive a miracle. But it does not matter to him that they have been helped.
He has 38 stories of miraculous miracles to tell, but he is so jaded because they won't help him, and all that he knows is to blame them. The reason that I cannot move on with my life is because of these people. And you grow up with resentment for what somebody didn't do to you. My parents, they didn't pay for my education, and they never bought me a new car, and my most boss won't promote me because he plays favorites. Somebody somewhere is the reason for all of my problems. And we live in a culture of aggrieved people who don't even know why they're aggrieved. They stand on the street with a picket sign and ask them why they're offended. They don't know. Somebody owes me something. As soon as I find out, I'll let you know. I've been mistreated. I have been hurt. There is a millionaire somewhere that must owe me money. Can I cut it straight for you? We're going to go eat. I promise you we are. I don't know your disadvantage, but I know Jesus Christ. And he can lift you above whatever happened to you 20 years ago. How in the world can you be disadvantaged and have a victim mentality when you have been saved? You have eternal life. You have direct access to the throne of God. You have the Holy Spirit living inside of you. Disadvantaged, you say? I say victorious. More than a conqueror is what I say. Victory over sin and victory over temptation, and adopted into the family of God and a fellowship of believers to encourage you. You can't possibly think that you are disadvantaged with a Bible in your lap and Jesus in your heart and a song in your mouth. I'm going to tell you something, that man who does not have a church, that doesn't know Jesus, who's never read the Bible one time in his life, he's out there to navigate this cruel world by his instincts alone. And what a disadvantage that man has. But you, hardships and troubles come to us all. But look up, there is somebody standing there who is asking you, would you be made whole? He didn't ask everybody, but he asked him. Sir, I have no... You cut yourself off from the people that love you the most. Don't be mad at them when you isolate yourself. You cut yourself off from people who want to help you. You don't get to play the no man cares card. I have no man. I'm done. The victim and his answer. Verse 8. Jesus said, rise, take up thy bed, and walk. Now, it's one thing for me to say in my calloused, cold way, just pick yourself up by the bootstraps and just do better. That could be quite insensitive. But this is Christ speaking. And when Christ says rise, he gives him the power to do it. He heals him as he speaks to him, enabling him to do what he has not been able to do for 38 years. It is of no help to tell a man what to do if you're not going to offer some help in how to do it. And here is how this man rises above his victimhood. He obeys the voice of Christ. Don't ever tell me again about no man and how you got here. That is no longer relative. Christ is speaking. And he says, get up. He will strengthen you to rise and to walk out of here. And maybe the word of Christ for you is be a kind one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another. Maybe the word of Christ to you is be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Maybe the word of Christ to you is in everything give thanks, for this is the will of God concerning you. Because there has never been a greater victim than Jesus Christ. And he says, follow me, I'll heal you, I'll strengthen you. I will give you a new mind. Rise, take up thy bed and walk. And if I could add, out of here. I give you the strength to get up and get out. Never blame these people again. Never say I would, but others won't. Never say it again. Never tell me what happened to you 38 years ago. Rise, take up thy bed and walk.